Welcome to the deep dive. You know how we do things here. Pick a fascinating topic, really unpack it. Well, today we're going to explore the unsettling world of religious extremism and spiritual manipulation. And we're going to be looking at this through a firsthand account from someone who experienced it all back in the 1980s.
Yeah, it's a powerful story. And I think what's fascinating here is how their experience with this specific movement, the shepherding movement, really reveals, you know, those kind of universal patterns of how people get drawn into systems that can be really harmful ultimately.
You know, when I was reading through the source material, I just kept finding myself kind of coming back to this thought, that line between genuine faith and manipulation. It's so blurry sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really is. And, you know, that's what makes this whole deep dive, I think, so important.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to look at what happened to this person. What red flags did they miss? What can we all learn from their experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty fascinating.
Okay, so let's start with the shepherding movement itself. What was the context for this movement? What was happening in the religious landscape back then?
Well, the shepherding movement kind of emerged in the early 1980s. And it was right on the heels of the charismatic renewal of the 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
It was a time of, I mean, really intense spiritual searching. A lot of people were drawn to the charismatic movement's emphasis on spiritual gifts, emotional experiences, that sort of thing.
And our source was initially excited about this too, right? They were kind of drawn into this energy.
Yeah absolutely. They talk about feeling very energized by the movement at first, but then as the shepherding movement started to gain momentum, they started to notice some things. It just made them question, you know, what was really going on here.
Yeah. The first thing that jumped out at me when I was reading the source was this concept of dominionism. Can you explain what that is and why it was a cause for concern?
You know, dominionism, sometimes called dominion theology, mm-hmm. is this idea that Christians are meant to have dominion, you know, or control over every aspect of society. So that means, you know, politics, education, the arts, everything. It's a very specific and some would say extreme interpretation of certain biblical passages.
Yeah. It's almost like a political agenda disguised as a religious belief in a way.
Right. And that's something that our source specifically calls out as a red flag.
Yeah.
Because it really suggests a desire for power and control that goes, you know, beyond just spiritual guidance.
And that connects to the other thing that stood out to me in the source material, which was the hierarchical structure of the movement.
Yeah.
They mentioned this fivefold ministry. What is that exactly?
Yeah, so the fivefold ministry is basically a hierarchical structure of leadership. And it's based on this particular interpretation of Ephesians 4.11, where it outlines these specific roles like apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers. But certain leaders in the shepherding movement would place themselves at the top of this pyramid, with Kenneth Copeland being like a prime example.
So not just spiritual guidance, but like a power structure too.
Exactly. And that power structure often manifested in a very specific way, pressure to contribute financially.
Mm.
And our source mentions this constantly. You know, money seemed to play a really huge role in the movement.
I'm always really wary of that element in any religious organization. Like, I always think of that saying, follow the money, you know? That often reveals what the true motives are.
That's a great point. And it connects directly to some of the other red flags our source noticed, like these staged miracles and the incorporation of these practices that they called strange fire, which I found really interesting.
Can you unpack that a bit more? Like, what exactly did they mean by strange fire? What does that even mean?
They were referring to these practices and teachings that seemed to kind of deviate from traditional Christian beliefs.
Mm.
So things like demonic manifestations, twitching, even references to kundalini energy, which, you know, is this whole concept from Hinduism. It's very strange.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because I was wondering about that kundalini reference. It seems so out of place in a Christian context.
It is. And that's exactly why our source flagged it as a red flag.
Okay.
Because it points to this tendency of some groups to mix and match different belief systems, you know, often in ways that could be really confusing, misleading even.
Right. And the source specifically contrasts this with their Baptist upbringing, which emphasized this idea of the priesthood of all believers, meaning, you know, that everyone has a direct connection with God, not necessarily needing this intermediary.
Right. So this top-down authoritarian approach of the shepherding movement was a major departure for them. And it caused a lot of internal conflict for our source. You know, they describe it as like a real crisis of faith.
It sounds like this all came to a head at a Kenneth Copeland convention in Fort Worth, Texas, What happened there? What was their experience like?
Well, our source traveled there with their pastor and some friends who were actually seeking healing for their children. And it was at this convention that they really started to see the cracks in the facade, so to speak.
What were some of the things that really bothered them? Like, what were the things that they were seeing?
First off, they described feeling deeply uneasy at the convention, almost like a sense of evil or darkness. And they also noticed things that seemed staged or manipulated, you know, like designed to create a spectacle rather than offer like genuine spiritual experiences.
So it's like they were replacing genuine faith with performance.
And then there was this pay-to-pray system, which our source describes as being particularly disturbing.
Yeah, when I was reading that, I was really struck by that. It's almost unbelievable.
Right. It was like people were literally lining up to give money to different religious leaders in exchange for like the privilege of shaking their hand or getting like a brief prayer. It's very bizarre.
It's like a spiritual marketplace.
Exactly. And it really made our source question like the motives and the integrity of the leaders that were involved.
So how did they respond? What did they do in the face of all of this?
Well, they did something incredibly brave. They stood up in the middle of this convention with thousands of people around and denounced the whole thing.
Wow, what was the reaction? That must have been intense.
Thousands of people started praying against the devil that they perceived in our source. Even our source's own pastor. It was a very, very intense moment.
It's like their worldview just couldn't allow for the possibility that something was wrong with the movement itself.
And that's a really important point. Mm-hmm. Because it speaks to the power of these groups to control the narrative and to silence dissent.
It's like they create a reality bubble that's very hard to escape from.
Exactly. And it took our source years to process what had happened and to reclaim their own faith on their own terms.
You know what's really fascinating to me about this whole story is that it's not just about one person's experience with one specific group. It's about something much bigger.
You're absolutely right. Their story shines a light on these much broader patterns of manipulation that we see in all sorts of groups.
Yeah.
Not just religious ones. We see it in cults, in political movements.
Yeah, I think that's a great place to pick up in part two, because I think we should really delve into that a bit deeper. Explore those common threads that connect these seemingly disparate groups, like cults, political extremists. I've even heard people compare this kind of behavior to narcissists.
Fascinating, yeah.
It's all about understanding the tactics of manipulation and learning how to protect ourselves and others from falling prey to them.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Before we went to ad bump, we were just discussing our sources. I mean, really harrowing experience with the shepherding movement. And I think one of the most chilling things that they said was how these groups, they operate on a different spiritual plane, almost.
Yeah, it really did send shivers down my spine when I read that. It's like they were tapping into something dark and dangerous. And because of that, it's almost like they're not playing by the same rules as everyone else. Logic and reason just go out the window.
What's so fascinating about that, though, is in some ways it makes them even more seductive.
Right.
They're offering something that seems to transcend the ordinary world. They're promising you access to this, you know, secret knowledge or a deeper level of truth.
Yeah, like a peek behind the curtain that most people don't get. And I can see how that would be incredibly appealing, especially to people who are, you know, feeling lost or disillusioned, maybe with traditional belief systems.
You hit the nail on the head. These groups offer a sense of belonging, a sense of certainty that's incredibly powerful if you're searching for meaning and purpose in your life.
But as our source discovered, that sense of belonging comes at a pretty steep price.
The price of freedom, you know, the price of individuality, the price of connection to anything outside the group. They demand complete loyalty, complete obedience, and they often encourage members to cut ties with anyone who questions their teachings.
So you're basically trading your autonomy for a false sense of security.
Exactly. And it's a bargain that's nearly impossible to back out of.
One of the things our source talked about was how these groups use isolation and control very specifically to keep their members in line. They create these echo chambers where dissenting voices are silenced.
It's almost like brainwashing.
Right.
They force members to believe that the group holds the only truth. And, you know, if you connect this to the bigger picture, think about how regimes throughout history have used these same tactics.
It makes me think of some of the things that I've read about the psychology of cults, how they prey on people's, you know, innate need to belong, their desire for certainty, and then they exploit those needs to maintain control.
You're exactly right. And that's why it's so important to cultivate critical thinking skills.
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to question what you hear, what you see. Don't be afraid to challenge authority.
And to maintain those connections with people outside the group, people who can offer a different perspective.
Absolutely. Don't let yourself become isolated. Keep those lifelines open.
Our source also made a really insightful point, I thought, about the importance of personal faith. It's like these groups are trying to insert themselves as intermediaries between the individual and the divine.
They want to be the gatekeepers of your spiritual experience. And that's a dangerous game because it gives them enormous power over their members.
Yeah, it's like they're saying, we hold the keys to the kingdom and you have to go through us to get there.
But genuine faith is about a personal relationship with the divine. It's not about blind obedience to some self-proclaimed guru or leader.
So how can we safeguard ourselves against this kind of spiritual manipulation? Because it sounds like it can be so subtle, so insidious, you might not even realize what's happening.
Well, being aware of the red flags is a good start. And we've talked about several already. But it's important to remember that this isn't always about some charismatic leader demanding your money or allegiance. You know, sometimes it's much more subtle than that.
So what are some of those more subtle signs that we should be watching out for? The things that might not set off alarm bells right away?
Well, pay attention to groups or individuals who claim to have all the answers. Those who present their beliefs as the only valid path to truth or enlightenment.
Yeah, it's like saying we have a monopoly on God, which when you put it that way, sounds pretty ridiculous. Doesn't
it? It really does. And that's a major red flag. True spirituality is about humility. It's about openness. It's not about arrogance or exclusivity.
Another thing that strikes me is how a lot of these groups, they seem to discourage critical thinking or questioning. If you raise doubts or concerns, it's almost like you're seen as a threat.
If you're not allowed to ask questions, to express doubts, then something is definitely wrong.
Right.
It's like they're trying to shut down your own inner voice, your own intuition.
And when you silence that inner voice, that's when you become much more vulnerable to manipulation.
Exactly. So trust your gut. If something feels off, don't ignore it. And don't be afraid to ask questions, even if they make others uncomfortable.
Our source also talked about the importance of being able to discern between genuine spiritual experiences and those that are, staged or manipulated for effect,
right,
which I imagine can be really hard to do.
It is. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Because these groups are often very skilled at creating a sense of awe and wonder. They know how to press people's emotional buttons, how to create this really charged atmosphere.
It's like they're masters of illusion.
That's a great way to put it. So it's important to stay grounded in your own discernment. Well, don't be swayed by outward appearances or, emotional displays.
Again, it all comes back to trusting your gut. If something feels inauthentic or off, it probably is.
And don't be afraid to walk away from any situation that feels uncomfortable or manipulative.
Yeah.
You don't owe anyone your loyalty, your obedience, especially if it feels like your freedom of thought is being compromised.
You have the right to protect your spiritual well-being.
You absolutely do. And I think it's important to remember that we all have a responsibility to look out for one another. If you see someone you care about being drawn into a potentially manipulative situation, don't be afraid to speak up.
Yeah, it might not be easy, but it could make all the difference.
It really could, because ultimately it's about supporting one another's spiritual journeys in a healthy and empowering way. We need to help each other stay grounded in truth and authenticity.
And on that note, I think it's time to move on to the final part of our deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground, but I'm really eager to hear what you have to say about what we can do about all of this. Like, how do we take this knowledge and put it into action?
Okay, so let's shift gears from analysis to action. What can our listeners actually do if they find themselves in a situation like the one we've been discussing? Stay tuned, because in part 3, we're going to explore some concrete steps that you can take to protect yourself and others from spiritual manipulation.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've been talking about this really unsettling story about spiritual manipulation and the dangers of religious extremism. But it's not enough to just talk about the problem, is it?
No, not at all. Knowledge is only powerful if we use it. So let's shift gears a little bit. From analysis to action, what can our listeners actually do if they find themselves in a situation like the one we've been discussing?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And I have a feeling you've got some insightful answers for us.
Well, I think it all starts with trusting your intuition. If something feels off about a group or a teaching, don't dismiss that feeling. It's like your internal alarm system going off.
That makes a lot of sense. But I can imagine it's easy to second guess yourself, especially if you're already feeling vulnerable or searching for answers. And I think that's what these groups, they're so good at, kind of making you doubt your own instincts, you know?
That's true. So here's a concrete step you can take. Ask questions, lots of them. A healthy spiritual community should welcome genuine inquiry. If you're met with hostility or evasion, that's a huge red flag.
Right. Like, why can't I talk to my family anymore? Or why do I have to donate all my money to this cause? Those are pretty reasonable questions to ask.
Exactly. And while we're on that topic, pay attention to how money is handled within the group. Are there constant pressures to donate? Is the leadership, you know, living lavishly while members are struggling to make ends meet? Those are definitely some warning signs.
It always seems to come back to these power dynamics. And I think that's what I found so disturbing about the pay-to-pray system that our source encountered at that Kenneth Copeland convention.
It was disturbing. And it highlights the importance of healthy leadership, you know? True spiritual leaders should be motivated by service, not personal gain. They should be accountable, humble, compassionate.
Yeah, so much of this boils down to discernment, being able to kind of see through the smoke and mirrors, so to speak. But how can you cultivate that kind of discernment? Like, where do you even begin?
It takes effort, definitely. But it's like building a mental immune system, you know? Expose yourself to different perspectives. Read widely. Talk to people with diverse viewpoints. The more you kind of expand your knowledge base, the better equipped you'll be to spot manipulation.
I love that analogy. You're basically inoculating yourself against these harmful ideologies by building up your critical thinking skills.
Exactly. And I think it's important to remember that this isn't just about protecting ourselves. We also have a responsibility to look out for others, especially those we care about.
So what can you do if you're concerned about someone who might be involved in a potentially manipulative group?
The most important thing is to maintain open communication. Express your concerns without judgment. Offer support. Let them know you're there for them.
Because sometimes just having someone who listens and believes you can make all the difference.
Absolutely. And if the situation feels dangerous or out of control, don't hesitate to seek professional help. There are therapists, counselors, even former cult members who can provide guidance and support.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation. So as we wrap up, what's the overarching message that our listeners can take away from this deep dive?
I think it comes down to empowerment. You know, you have the power to think critically, to trust your intuition, and to make informed choices about your spiritual path. Don't let anyone take that power away from you.
And remember, even in the darkest of situations, even when it feels like everything has been turned upside down, that spark of personal connection with the divine can't be extinguished.
That's beautifully said. True faith is about freedom, not control.
Well, folks, we've covered a lot of ground today, but as always, our deep dive is just the beginning. We encourage you to continue exploring these ideas, ask questions, do your research, and most importantly, trust yourself.
And if this conversation is, you know, sparked something in you, don't let that flame die out. Keep seeking, keep questioning, keep growing.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. We'll see you next time for another journey into the depths of knowledge and insight.